Hello, I'm Chuck Vega, and I'm a clinical professor of family medicine at the University of California at Irvine, and welcome to Critical Issues in Endocrinology. Today, I'm really excited to be joined by Dr. Brad Annawalt, who is a professor of medicine and an endocrinology specialist at the University of Washington. Brad, great to have you. Thanks for coming today.
Yeah, good to see you again, Chuck.
All right. So we have two principal issues to address in the first of two segments, focused on the results of the ENDO 2017 conference, which was a great conference. Sounds like there were some really innovative and groundbreaking types of presentations there. First, I want to highlight a new class of medications, which represents a different paradigm for the management of one of the most common symptoms we see in primary care, postmenopausal hot flashes. So we know that systemic estrogen-based hormone therapy is the most effective treatment for hot flashes, but a new class of medications offers hope for effective treatment of this potentially disabling symptom with a potentially better safety profile as well. The new agents target neurokinin 3 receptors, which become more active in menopause. In one placebo-controlled trial of 37 women, the NK3 antagonist known as MLE4901 produced hot flashes by 45% relative to placebo. Treatment was well tolerated, although three women in the active treatment group experienced transient but severe increases in liver transaminase levels. In another trial of an NK3 antagonist, there was a similar significant reduction in hot flashes in comparing, and I'm dreading the pronunciation of this, but I know I'm not going to get it right, fezolinetant or fezolinetant versus placebo. It did work, whatever its name is. 35% of women receiving the NK3 antagonist experienced complete cessation of hot flashes compared with only 5% of women in the placebo group. And fezolinetant was also associated with better quality of life, sleep, and disability compared with placebo. There were no serious adverse events associated with the active treatment. So pitching over to you, Brad, what is the potential for these NK3 antagonists to supplant hormone therapy as routine therapy for menopausal symptoms?
Well, this is an important study. I don't think that it's going to supplant hormone therapy for postmenopausal women. That's still the gold standard. But what's so exciting about this, first of all, for busy clinicians out there, I think remembering NKB, neurokinin B, is the important thing, because I think you're going to hear more about these neurokinin B, NKB inhibitors. But the importance of this is that this study showed that not only do you decrease the frequency of hot flashes, but you decrease the severity. So this is a study of women who had a lot of symptomatic hot flashes, enough that it was disturbing their quality of life. And in this relatively common clinical scenario, hormone therapy is the gold standard, but many of these women can't take hormone therapy or can't take it after 5 years after menopause. So the fact that there may be another option out there that's quite effective is quite exciting news. The one other option that clinicians have been commonly prescribing, SSRIs or antidepressants that may decrease hot flashes, are often poorly tolerated by postmenopausal women. So this is an exciting development. The other component of this, we're focusing on postmenopausal women, but there are men that are treated with hormone therapy for prostate cancer. They get hot flashes. They, of course, don't want to take estrogen oftentimes. And so to have this possibility available, that's a non-traditional treatment for hot flashes, is really a terrific innovation.
Do you think that these drugs could potentially be added on to hormone therapy for women who don't get significant relief, or to keep the dose of hormones lower?
Yeah, that's a great question. The short answer is I don't know.
Right.
Longer answer is understanding the physiology of how NKB works. This is a very exciting development in the past several years. NKB is a pathway that helps regulate the secretion of GnRH. That's the hormone that stimulates FSH, LH from the pituitary and regulates the ovaries and the testes. So NKB and its related compounds, which are kisspeptin and dynorphin, these things regulate the development of puberty, but they also are important for regulating hot flashes. So it's speculated that estrogen may affect these neurons in the hypothalamus, the NKB. So it's not clear to me whether or not using estrogen plus an NKB inhibitor will be helpful, whether it augment the effects, or perhaps, as you suggest, reduce the need for a higher dosage of estrogen. So I don't know, but it's certainly a plausible hypothesis.
Yeah, really interesting. And I think the other big issue with particularly any treatment for postmenopausal symptoms is safety, because that's something I think a lot of stakeholders, and including very much patients, are keyed in on. And so it'd be interesting to see the long-term safety data with this new class of medications too, as they're currently in phase 2 trials, and we'll get more moving forward. I just want to pivot now to another common issue that's really important, and that's subclinical hypothyroidism. Now, we know subclinical hypothyroidism is common among older adults. A new randomized trial of 737 adults at age 65 years and older who had an elevated TSH, but a normal free thyroxine level, found that there was no difference in thyroid-related symptoms in comparing thyroid hormone treatment versus placebo. And levothyroxine treatment among this group with subclinical hypothyroidism also didn't improve health-related quality of life, body weight, or activities of daily living. So I think this trial is important, and it makes me question, is it ever appropriate to screen an asymptomatic older adult for hypothyroidism? Barring that, they don't have osteoporosis or other types of disorders as well, just healthy older adults, should we ever screen those folks for thyroid illness?
Well, it always feels like a bit of a trap, Chuck, to be asked the question ever or never.
This isn't a USMLE exam, where you know that's not the right answer.
So, having said that, I think actually the answer to that question is no, we should not be screening older adults for hypothyroidism. We can do case finding, meaning if they have some disease that you suspect might be attributable to thyroid dysfunction, then I think it's prudent to get a TSH in that setting. So you mentioned for the older person with atrial fibrillation that doesn't have another obvious etiology, or a patient with unexplained osteoporosis. Both of those are reasonable settings for looking for hyperthyroidism in this particular case. But it's become sort of common to get TSHs routinely in practice. And I think that this study demonstrates that there's little value in screening for mild or subclinical hypothyroidism in an older population. There's two important findings about this study. One, this is older adults. The mean age was 74. And I think that the data are now emerging to suggest that older adults, ages 70, 80, 90, tend to have TSHs that are a little bit higher than younger people. And in fact, there may be even a benefit to being what we would describe as subclinical or mildly hypothyroid, have a TSH of 6 to 10. Mm-hmm. And this suggests that although it's safe to give those patients levothyroxine, it doesn't confer any benefit in terms of symptoms that you might attribute to hypothyroidism or to fatigue. So it's an important study in that regard. The one caveat that I would say, there's two caveats really. One is that this study didn't look really conclusively at TSHs that are 10 to 20 or even 25.
Sure. Right.
Another scenario for our practitioners, they see patients with T4s, thyroid hormone levels that are normal, and TSHs that are even higher than 10. And perhaps those patients will benefit. The other comment I make is that this doesn't apply to younger patients, and it doesn't exclude the possibility that some patients might benefit. So I interrupted you there, Chuck.
No, those are great points. I completely agree. And I think that where I see that's exactly right, and that where I usually see that mild elevation of TSH, it's interesting, is among the older adults. The younger adults are less likely to have the subclinical hypothyroidism in the first place. Correct?
Agreed.
Okay. All right. Wow. That's great stuff. This is very, very helpful. I think very relevant to clinical practice now, but also in the future. Looking forward to NKB antagonists and potentially that therapy among postmenopausal women. We do have another session coming up, so please join us for that, everyone. Thank you very much, Brad.
Thank you.